Chapter 28. Jesse Stone stopped and stared into a men's clothing store window, as if he was actually interested in the preppy summer closeout clothing displayed on the Frozen Smile mannequins. He never understood the appeal of seersucker, never thought it looked anything other than ridiculous. Nor did he get the appeal of most of the clothing in the shop window on Fifth Avenue. Some of the shoes, he supposed, were okay. He liked some of them. The rest of it, you wouldn't catch him dead in any of it. And that was why he had stopped. Not to check out the clothing, but rather not to be caught dead. It was an old trick, using a plate glass window as a mirror to see who walked past you, or to see who had stopped behind you. An old trick, yet still an effective one. As best as he could tell, he wasn't being tailed. He turned away from the seersucker-clad mannequin and headed back up Fifth to the building that housed the offices of Pervil Kennedy Near, the law firm that represented the East Coast interests of Hunsicker and Hunsicker Development, LLC. Jesse hadn't made it 10 steps when he felt a hand clutch his forearm. His body clenched, his mind racing. Was this when peepers would come at him? Was this where? Was this how? Had he overthought it? He had no time to react. Jesse Stone was not a man to feel vulnerable, but he felt awfully vulnerable right at that moment. As Jesse shifted his free hand toward his holstered 9mm, the already noisy street was overwhelmed by the shrill siren, the electronic whoops and barks of a passing ambulance. If this was peepers, if he was going to use that .22, no one would hear the shots above the din and street commotion. His execution would go unseen. In that mass of bodies, even the street cameras would have trouble picking up what was happening. By the time anyone noticed him slumping to the ground, peepers would be half a block away. "Perdón, señor," a man's voice said to him as the ambulance wailed its way downtown. Jesse looked first to the hand on his forearm and then to the face of the man to whom it belonged. And when he saw the reddish skin of the hand, the thick wrist and ugly fingers, Jesse breathed again and moved his own hand away from the 9mm. The man peering up at him had a familiar face. It wasn't a face he recognized, per se, but it was familiar nonetheless. He had seen many such faces in L.A., faces that spoke of invading conquistadors and native peoples. The man had jet black hair, deep brown eyes, high cheekbones, a crooked smile, and a beak of a nose. Jesse noticed, too, that the man wasn't alone. Alongside him was a woman about his age and a teenage boy and girl. The teenagers were too busy with their tablets to pay the rest of the world any mind. Jesse smiled back at the man as if he were an old friend and asked in Spanish how he could help. Although Jesse wasn't exactly fluent in Spanish, he managed directions to the United Nations easily enough. The man thanked him, the wife too. The teenagers looked like they would have rather gone anywhere else. As the family disappeared into the crowd behind him, so too did Jesse smile. This innocent encounter was a cruel reminder that peepers had, in his way, already won. As certain as he was 10 minutes ago of how, when, and where the killer would come at him, that was how unsure he was now. And it was a bad day to be unsure. The worst day. Because now, more than ever, he knew that convincing Hale Hunsicker to go along with his plan would be perhaps the most important thing he'd ever had to do. If he couldn't convince Hunsicker to agree, it would be as good as handing down death sentences to most of the people he loved on this earth. And they likely wouldn't be quick deaths, either. Jesse got that sick feeling in his gut again, remembering how he'd found Suit all shot up. How he'd had to practically hold Suit's abdomen together until help came. Jesse recalled the state Kayla and Vic Prado were in when they were rescued from the basement of an abandoned house that peepers had used as his own temporary house of horrors. Vic's teeth had been yanked out of his mouth one at a time, and many of his bones systematically broken. Vic still wasn't right, and never would be. Fortunately, Jesse had gotten to them before peepers had lost full interest in Vic. Although he'd burned the inside of one of Kayla's thighs to make a point, he'd yet to start on her in earnest. Jesse didn't like thinking about what might have been. As he passed by the front entrance of the building that housed the offices of the law firm, Jesse was thinking deeper thoughts than he usually troubled himself with. He was thinking about what one of his high school science teachers had said a long, long time ago, about how the universe was a mechanism of balance, and how it strove for that balance at all costs. A mechanism of balance. Jesse hadn't thought about that phrase or old Mr. Farman for years. It was no mystery why it had come back to him now. By asking Geno Fish to intercede on his behalf in order to save Kayla and what was left of Vic, Jesse had set things in motion that had already condemned Geno Fish and his receptionist to death. As he doubled back to the building entrance, sure again that he wasn't being followed, Jesse wondered what it would take to have balance restored.